I had heard that you had gone to the fair in 19... You were born in the 30s, so it had to be like...
I believe it was 1943. Thereabouts. It was the World's Fair. It was very exciting. I was 4 years old.
Oh, a little four-year-old Carl.
I was a little Carl. And it was wonderful. There was stuff from all over the world. It was the first demonstration of long-distance television. I would like to tell you that I instantly knew that this would be part of my future, but I didn't. But it was very exciting.
I remember the 64 and 65 World's Fair having a number of exhibits that had a profound influence on my worldview and my perception and my idea of what was possible. Certain images stand out. One in particular was the Bell Systems Pavilion, which had, like with a lot of the other large-scale exhibits out there, it had one of those people mover type of setups where you'd sit in a chair and you'd be carted along a corridor. They'd pass you by various things as a narrator was talking about what you were looking at. And the things always had something to do with the future. Just like in the 1939 and 40 World's Fair, future was a big deal at the World's Fair, that's for sure. But above and beyond that particular aspect of the Bell System exhibit, the thing that really stood out for me was the exhibit hall they dumped you in after you were done with that part of the experience. And this exhibit hall had a number of kiosks with little demonstrations of one thing and another that were just really something. As a 10-year-old, you can imagine my fascination with a machine that would play tic-tac-toe against you. And you couldn't beat it no matter how hard you tried. And I just thought that was the greatest thing since sliced bread at that time. There were also various exhibits that tested your hearing and pitch perception ability. And I just seemed to nail those things really well, whatever that you had to do. Like, I think they played a pitch, and then you had to turn a knob to bring the other pitch in line with it or something like that. There were just a number of different audio-based exhibits like that or kiosks that, for some reason, I really took to. For one thing, I seemed to do really well with them, and for the other, they were just really fascinating and really well done. They had a booth also that demonstrated a vocoder. And the first year we went, I got picked as the person who went into the glass booth, and I couldn't hear what I sounded like at all. And I'd hear a voice on a speaker tell me to say something or try to sing something, and I would just sing it, and I'd see everybody outside just going either ooing and aahing or laughing hysterically. And it wasn't until the following year I went where someone else went into the glass booth and I actually heard what they were doing was messing with the pitches of people's voices in real time, which was, you know, a pretty radical concept back then.
It comes in, it must go out. Testicles deviant to Fudd's law. So, with the invention of the motor-operated pushover, man and science gave birth to life here, today, in the future. Man, woman, child, all is up against the wall of science.
I like the future. I'm in it.
Build it myself, and I love it.
I'm not sure.
Personally, I'm very pleased.
No, I think it's going to be all right.
I can dig it.
How do I like the future? Well, the future's not here yet, man.
Smaller, but cleaner.
Right on.
I said live it or live with it.
Straight ahead.
Well, I think it has quite a great future in it. It's electric.
Yes, is the Honorable Chester Cadaver. Sure, understanding today's complex world of the future is a little like having bees live in your head. But there they are.
Polly and I went to the circus. And Polly got hit with a rolling pin.
But we didn't go in.
Yow!
CERT International, Amal Nitro's Soviet Surplus Floating Fortress of Fun. The famous five-ring sensual circus of the sea aboard the once dangerous, now fabulous aircraft carrier, Stalyagi. CERT International. And here's your host, your first to mate, and chief petting officer, Randy Rocknoodle.
Thank you. And welcome here we're again beyond the 3 mile limit of your wildest explanations. This is the world where beautiful people, tender animals, and high voltage robots get it together. And here it is, the show with me in the center ring, our ring master, automatic Captain Kurt Sloman.
Welcome aboard, CERT International. Greetings to all of you who are here and to all of you who are not here.
Yes, folks. We're being watched tonight by satellite.
But the TV tourists are not going to see but half the fun.
The top half.
Yes, the dumb forces of international law and fundamental human decency prevent us from focusing our cameras on
the dizzy display of instinctive primitive appetites
as the cannibals and the animals eat each other in ring number 4.
Nor can we let the cameras reveal
the shameless shenanigans of Duar and McDonald, the Irish Exploder.
No, McDonald!
Former mailmen, now all mailmen. You can't see them as they meet in ring number 2.
The black holes. Sinless sisters from inner space.
Men disappear into them.
They disappear into themselves.
It's magic.
CERT International.
And in ring number 5. Forget it. Only the living will be able to see.
The daring Hintons, a liberated middle-class family performing dangerous acts of love with unpredictable stimuli and stimulants.
United at last with Pluto and Thrasher. Each German police dogs trained to sniff marijuana, now with their warm noses in another bush.
Into the future of this unfinished world of ours, there has been created for the New York World's Fair a thought-provoking exhibit of the developments ahead of us. The greater and better world.
The future of capitalism, as depicted in a General Motors sponsored exhibit in the 1939 World's Fair, a corporate vision of freedom and human needs fulfilled by the free market.
Let's travel into the future. What will we see?
Firebird 2 to Control Tower. We are about to take off on the highway of tomorrow. Stand by.
It is the result of a market view of society, wrote Carl Polanyi, which equated economics with contractual relationships and contractual relationships with freedom.
We had thought for years, astronomers had told us after looking to the great universe, that it was green.
Yeah.
I kind of like that green. Green's cool. The greens, right? It's
Man. Oh, green is really good.
There you go. Isn't it good?
Yeah, it's the best thing you get.
I'm a green man. I drive green a hybrid all the way. Vehicle.
Do you
man.
Have one of those hybrid cars?
I have a gas and
whatever
car,
it is.
Man.
Gas and, yeah, and I don't know, methane or something.
Poop. Gas and poop. I drive a gas and poop car, man.
He does it himself.
Do you have to poop into it yourself?
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Man, it's like I recycle, right. It's like good shit, man.
Okay. Peter, what were you saying?
Well, man? Yeah, green's good, as you say, right. Yeah, I can't use my poop hybrid car because I'm a meat eater and the smell is just awful.
Oh, you can eat vegetables, man. You can eat green. Well, and poop, right. You know,
you gotta go to Texas,
faster,
my man.
In fact, yeah, right.
In Texas, they
you
like
poop
that.
Easier,
they
man, like if yeah, you eat greens. Yeah, you know, right. Man.
So anyway, I thought the universe was green, and that was a good thing for me. It's been a hard time, and green is good. And I pick up the newspaper, and I discover that
green
according to Dr. Carl Glazebrook and Dr. Ivan Baldry, the universe is beige.
Oh, wow.
Beige,
what
man.
A
beige. I think that they were just, hey, these guys
glazed
were high.
And bald.
These guys were high, and they were looking at the reflection of their computer in the screen, because all computers
like
are beige, man.
This is like some Lenny Bruce routine.
It really is, but it's true.
It's beige. No, it's like some
Lord Buckley.
Lord Buckley.
Like
is what
beige,
it's like
man. The universe is beige.
That's sad, you know.
It's really sad. It's real sad.
Oh, the Nan says the universe is beige.
I mean, if I'm going to die and go out, since death is one of the leitmotifs of the
yes,
show today,
is,
if I'm going to die and go out into the great universe, I don't mind being surrounded by the planets and the green, but to go out there and be somewhere fucking between Saturn and Neptune and my Uranus or my Uranus and find out I'm in the big beige, man, that bring me down.
Right.
I want to come back, man. I'll be a pig.
Whatever happened to like the black, you know, like the absence of all color, which used to be in our original language the word white. You know that, didn't you?
Yeah.
The word white meant both black and white because it was the absence of color.
But
so
white,
the universe could be both black and white at the same time, which is the way we've always thought of it. A lot of
excuse
blinding
me,
white light and black
the
nothing.
Of all
white.
Color is Squaresville,
the
isn't it?
Over there
excuse
in the
me.
Yeah,
am I supposed to believe this?
No,
that's
these
my
are
question.
Just
am
theories.
I supposed to believe this?
These are theories. And in one universe, what we're saying is true. And in
a
parallel
wait.
Universe, what we're saying is hog shit. So make your choice.
Do you believe all you hear and hate people?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, good.
There
we got a number
go.
For you.
Another one
call
for
this
right.
number.
I live under your windshield wiper.
No,
yes,
really?
I
are
do.
You that little guy that spits every time I push the button, you spit and the thing's
that's
going?
That's right.
Well, keeps me clean, man.
We take in stimuli from the outer world, but everything happens inside of our heads. It's all processed inside of our minds. So I'd like to think, and I do think, that our equations are telling us things about the real world out there. But, you know, so if I look over at that wall over there and it sort of has a red color, I know that there is no such thing as red. In the world, there are vibrating electric and magnetic fields that are bouncing off that wall and entering my eye and stimulating things inside of my brain. And so red happens deep inside this thing. And so you're ineluctably led to wonder about the relationship between conscious experience and the qualities of the world that we as physicists more typically study.
Tire-biter, he's a spy and a girl delighter. Porgy, firefighter, he's a student like you. If you're looking for a captain of the ring ball team, you can bet he won't be there. You'll find him popping off at Pop's sodium shop to trim a red with red hair. Doopy-doo-wah.
Two, three, four.
Nod out of the town, discriminated earth persons have to fall out behind a wall of masks at Mir Noche's Bomba Shelter.
Wow, every night you can push it along to the penumbral emissions of Los Chicanos from El Outer Space.
Las Fabulous, this week only red beans and red.
My strong belief, my strong guess, if you will, my hunch is that that story is going to play out again 10, 50, 1,000 years. I don't know the time scale, but at some point we will look back at this era and it will be, you know, we'll smile at the mystery that we injected into consciousness, but we'll find that it's just particles moving under the laws of physics in a sufficiently organized manner, carrying out information processing, and the byproduct of those processes is the conscious awareness that we all have.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had an experience in Amsterdam of an altered state. of consciousness that changed your view about consciousness. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. It was all legal. Didn't inhale.
This is Canada, by the way. Yeah. You needn't worry.
Yeah. So good. So you're right. I did have an experience of that sort. And what it did to me in terms of my thinking about these ideas was to affirm this notion that all it is particles moving through the gloppy gray structure inside of our heads. Because merely by slightly changing the identity of those particles, I radically change the experience of conscious awareness. And if consciousness was somehow, you know, outside, I mean, there are ideas that people have, interesting ones, that there's a consciousness field that we sort of tap into, there would be a consistency to that experience that could not be so uniquely tied to just changing a small collection of the ingredients that are flowing through the apparatus. So to me, it was just so patently clear that you just change the chemistry a little bit and you change the experience. The experience is tied to the particles that are moving through the structure.
So it was an intended experiment then.
Well, I wouldn't... yes, absolutely right. Absolutely right.
I had heard that your best moments were in the shower stone when you came up with your best stuff.
Well, you know, I was an early advocate of marijuana use, and I had used marijuana in a controlled experimental situation. But I found that cannabis really has amazing qualities to it. It has amazing healing qualities. It is something that I wish had never been outlawed. I think we would be a much healthier society. And I think that the psychoactive uses of marijuana, as long as one doesn't overdo them, can be very, very valuable. They blur the sort of membrane between things. It lets you appreciate other people a little bit more deeply. It lets you appreciate the beauty of the world a little bit more deeply. And I just am a big advocate for it.
So can we safely say that you're a little bit of a pothead?
It's one of them. It's coming up. I'll carry the ball.
Hiya, kiddo.
Shoes for industry, compadre.
Yeah, sure. Hey, you guys holding?
Oh, gosh, no. The means of production are held by all the people.
That's right.
No, man. You know, got any uppers?
Uppers? No, there are no classes in our society.
Or in our high school.
We're quiet, stupid.
Hey, come on, baby. You can tell me. You got any pot?
Oh, not yet. But soon, heavy industry will make it possible for all the people to have everything it desires in a free marketplace.
That's right.
Oh, Daddy, oh, you guys are so crazy.
You know, I don't exactly like that word, but I make use of the marijuana.
Take another one.
Oh, far up. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right near the end.
Yeah. Okay.
Dog and she know it. Mm-hmm. I got about just a half a mind and she can blow it. Yeah, yeah. You take a trip to the left, you take a trip to the right. Well, you trip too far, you're gonna fall all night. Well, that's what you get standing by yourself doing the dirty dog on the continental shelf. It's okay.
A Child's Garden of
DeGrasse Tyson. And Carl and I actually like got high together.
Really?
Yeah, we smoked a joint together on Project Woo Woo.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is a great show, folks.
Yeah. So, you know. Yeah, because I mean, you know, I hear you also are a little bit of a, you partake.
I explore the world.
Yes, you explore the world.
It's all a part of the atoms that make up this planet are there for our consumption.
Oh, you guys are so crazy.
Ha, ha, ha. I think that's funny today as it first was back in the sizzling 70s. That's right. I'm Dexter Fong, and nothing will make me forget the thrill we had making funny records back then. Yes, my late partner Hideo Wallbanger and I were the men of modern comedy. And today, when the satellite net is crammed with the stupid drivel of the Hot Humorous 100, where can a gone cat like yourself get the laughs that we were making then just for you? What thrilling moments. Well, they're all yours now on a double fun, double deal. Dope Humor of the 70s, Volumes 1 and 2. Who can forget such modern comedy hits as Cheech Chong's Reuben and the Jets, or Kong, Ress, and Wonders Beat the Electrician? Who did you have your arm up when you first sighed to Bootleg by the Four or Five Crazy Guys, or cut a rug to the antics of Hilario Gomez and the Wanderers? Yes, all million sellers, plus the Fab Fire Sign, together again on this bonus extra. Yes, a rare collection of Phil, and Phil at their hilarious, inscrutable best, if you order now. Oh, God, wouldn't it be great to laugh again and stop bumping into things? Well, bozos, get on it and do it every day. Now the 70s aren't gone, if you're still smiling, order now.
Right, Dope Humor Offer Box 69, California. That's right, Dope Humor Offer Box 69, California, now!
We have a bad habit in the humanities of assuming the scientists have the last word. But when I was doing the research for this, for my chapter on cannabis in the book, I remember asking a pharmacologist in New York who had studied drugs for years and years, and I said, well, what does it mean scientifically to be high? And he said something very interesting. He says, well, you know, we don't understand consciousness yet scientifically, so how can we hope to understand changes in consciousness scientifically? And he and others basically told me that, you know, you're better off with the poets for now on this one. This is one area where the philosophers and the poets may yet have much to teach the scientists.
We are hardwired to make sense of things. And when things aren't in the right way that they make sense, sometimes we make connections that aren't necessarily there. So we like to believe these things. You know, people love to believe that there is life after death, where we have our consciousness and we have our brains and our memories and all of that. I would love to believe that, but I have not seen any evidence for it. And I've always had the attitude that when something is really very hard to believe and very convenient, it's all the more important to have a lot of proof before you invest your belief in that. Okay, so as you know, I have been an advisor to NASA and have had a lot to do with the space program. It was my idea to send the so-called golden records up on the Voyager spacecraft.
Oh, wait, what? Can you talk a little bit about the golden records?
Yeah. So what we wanted to do, and the Voyager spacecraft, were the Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 were sent out in the late 70s, early 80s to go very, very, very far, farther than any craft has ever made. They're very lightweight. They have a propulsion system that lets them basically keep going using solar energy and background energy from the universe. And we decided we wanted to put in them something that would represent the best of humanity.
Aww.
So we got this golden record and we put a stylus in and we put instructions in pictograms for how to play this. Now, the odds are that neither of these spacecrafts will ever be discovered by anyone, that these spacecrafts will probably burn up or they'll run into some asteroid or something. But there is just a little tiny minute chance that they might be found. And it's such a wonderful human thing to hope that someday we would find this. So we put on this on the Golden Records. We put on people talking in dozens of different languages.
Oh.
We put on sounds of human beings doing distinctly human things, laughing and singing. And we put on a number of amazing musical pieces that represent the best of humanity.
So what would those musical pieces be?
Well, so we wound up having a lot of classical music. And then I very much wanted to have the song "Here Comes the Sun" by the Beatles in it.
That's so sweet. I'm going to take one more hit.
Which is a beautiful song to send out into the universe.
It is. It really is.
And George Harrison, who wrote the song, was all in favor of this. And the rest of the Beatles all wanted to do it. And the record company, EMI, would not let us put their song on the record.
That is ridiculous.
Because they said that they had no way of collecting royalties from whoever in the universe found or distributed it.
Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
Oh, that son of mine.
He's not your son, Fred.
Stop torturing me, Ethel.
For almost 5 billion years, the sun has supported its tremendous mass against the crushing force of gravity through the energy produced by the fusion of hydrogen nuclei in its core. That energy powers a frenzied environment of fast-moving particles that exert a strong outward pressure. This standoff between gravity pulling inward and particles pushing outward will hold firm for about another 5 billion years. But then the balance will be upended. The outward pressure from fusion's production of energy in the core will subside, and consequently, the inward pull of gravity will gain the upper hand. The sun will begin to implode.
As it implodes, it will get hotter and hotter toward the center. That will ignite a new phase of hydrogen fusion in a shell around the helium core.
Surrounded by a thin, thin, thin 16-millimeter shell. And inside, it's delicious.
I'll bet.
That's Arnie's whole beef halves we deliver. Thirsty?
That's me.
Wouldn't you like some of this old Filipino creamy coming in shorts and quarts?
Yeah.
And tubs of slaw.
Give me two.
Sorry, only one tub per family. That's whole beef halves. We deliver everywhere.
Offer not good after curfew in sectors R or M.
They never come up into the hills.
And that will be at such a high temperature that the energy produced and the pressure produced will be enormous. So the sun will swell to over 200 times its current size. It will engulf Mercury, Venus. And the computer simulations say that it may engulf Earth, but it's not clear that it will. But certainly conditions on Earth by that point, say 5 billion years from now, will not allow our form of life to exist. The temperature will be so enormous. So if we're still here, we will have had to leave and find another home.
Looking even further into the far, far future, an even bigger cataclysm may be in store. A massive event that even has a name.
The Big Rip.
And just as it was at the beginning of time, so it may be at the end.
About 20 billion years from now, repulsive gravity will drive apart clusters of galaxies. About a billion years later, the stars constituting the Milky Way will be flung apart like sparkles in a fireworks display. About 60 million years after that, Earth and the other planets in the solar system will be thrust away from the sun. A few months later, the repulsive gravitational force between molecules will cause stars and planets to explode. And with the passage of just 30 minutes more, the repulsion between particles constituting individual atoms will have grown so strong that even they will be blasted apart. The final state of the universe depends on the currently unknown quantum nature of space and time. In loose terms that for now lack mathematical rigor, it is possible that repulsive gravity will shred the very fabric of space-time itself. Reality started with a bang, and 100 billion years since the Big Bang, it may end with a rip.
Just to end off with, I'm going to quote you to yourself. You say in the closing section of your book, "As we hurtle toward a cold and barren cosmos, we must accept that there is no grand design." You also say that we are inhabiting a breathtaking, if transient, present. So how do you find meaning when you know that the universe is withering away?
Well, it really is going back to the very first thing that we discussed. If the only place where you find value and meaning is in legacy, in the future, in creating something that will last, then you will be disappointed by our understanding of how the physical universe works, because nothing is permanent. Nothing lasts over sufficiently long timescales. So that necessarily, for me at least, drives a shift in perspective. And it really is just this deep sense of gratitude for being a human being, for living in this era in which we can figure out so much and we can create wondrous things. We can also do devastating things to the environment, to ourselves, and so forth. But I like to focus on the good side of things. And that, to me, borders almost on reverence for the fact that we are here at all. And that, to me, is enough.
I wondered if you, as a little boy, would look up at the sky.
Oh, yes, all the time. And I loved when I was a little boy hearing the stories of who the constellations were and what they would do. And later, when I learned that they were actually just, you know, balls of gas that are making fusion and light and
You're
energy.
Making this very unromantic.
But there's something very wonderful also about that. And I think sometimes we like to have the stories that make our hearts go pitter-patter. And sometimes that's, you know, a god up in the sky. And sometimes it's just the fact that we all, every molecule in us comes from the stars. And there's something amazing and wondrous about that.
That is cool. I always think of that. Like when I'm definitely really full of anxiety, I just remember that I'm stardust. Like literally we're all stardust. Do you remember when you first found that out? Was there like, did you get like a, oh my gosh, I'm made of stardust. We are all just stardust. Do you remember that?
I do.
So the Buddha only became what we all become. Dust.
Very enlightened dust?
No, just dust.
Huh.
The destiny of all life.
Very enlightened life?
The Buddha glows only in our minds.
So it's all a joke?
There is no all. There is no emptiness. We are, and we must cherish all that is in this fragment of imagined space-time and cause not its destruction.
We must not look for compassion from the stars. We are the stars.
The thought of a blossom, sweetness beyond any perfume.
The cosmos has to be on my side because my brain created it. Crushed those pseudo-realities into sausage meat. And bask in the glow of my very own sun.
The Dharma has been in vain. I won it all again, and again it escaped me. the four-thirds of the universe dissolve. The Dharma, the Sangha, and the Buddha are the three stooges.
Mom?
You want to make something out of it?
Can I create a world?
The Dharma's in the stars, glistening, distant, burning gases. How could one human mind glow so brightly?
Ouch!
All is Maya. Me too.
The Dharma warms you with wisdom and compassion. The stars just burn.
Save me from blindness.
The rocks look not, eternally locked in laughter at us time's butterflies as we flicker by.
Candescens solum nunc gubernaculi illud, conclave stato tempore gasseum orbis terrarum, in ocrum penetrat in oracle.
He is saying that at a determined time, the command module, now all alone, glowing because of air friction like a shooting star, enters into the Earth's atmosphere and flies through it at an unheard-of speed, heading for an extremely narrow, circumscribed, open place in the Pacific Ocean.
Peten circumscriptum maris magni propetalum locum.
From out of a cave in the north came the first buffalo. Pure white was his thick robe, and his horns and hooves were black. Nearby an Indian was gathering herbs, and to him the buffalo spoke, saying, I and my tribe will come to you and your people in great numbers. Use us well, for the day will come when we shall go back into the ground again. And when we are no more, the Indian will have gone.
California condor, southern sea otter, kaibab squirrel, Hudsonian godwit, blackfin cisco, kuiui, Aleutian Canada goose, white-tailed deer, ivory-billed woodpecker.
No, we're out of those.
Thick-tailed chub.
No, I'm sorry. They're all gone.
European
whale. Pink and black socks.
Iron green wren.
Charcoal gray sage.
No,
wren. 1957 Persian
fallow deer.
Sorry, I ain't got any.
Get a job. False sunbird. Fat-tailed lemur.
Trumpeter swallow.
Darwin's finch.
American alligator. Ipswich sparrow.
Iroquois.
Black-footed ferret.
Pork martinus.
Warbler. Klamath summer, Vegas Valley leopard frog,
Galapagos hawk,
masked bobwhite,
Jimmy
southern bald eagle,
American purple gallinule,
Eskimo curlew,
Nikolai
Tesla,
Hal Roach,
Delmarvin Peninsula,
Charlie
fox,
Chaplin,
black toad, spring spoke.
So I find now, as some 8 years ago, I was doing things for the first time, I am doing them now for the final time.